Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, now we're back for episode 3 of Digital Divination. As you recall, our first two episodes, our first one we talked about game balance. Our second one kind of discussed how Starfinder differs from Pathfinder in terms of concept and rules. And today we're going to jump into what makes a fun fight, what makes it memorable for players, for GMs, and what type of considerations there are on the part of GMs, authors, and developers for building and framing encounters and events that are going to be enjoyable for players. And so, Ron, I'm going to let you start off and talk about kind of the big picture thing is, as a developer and writer, what considerations you take.
Well, the key thing about encounters is you want to have a couple of big sort of memorable experiences that the players have at the table. Not every encounter that the players get into has to be one that is big and memorable. Some of them can actually be a little bit on the forgettable side. Oh yeah, we roughed up some space pirates on our way to the asteroid, and we showed them who was boss. So it doesn't have to be something that is sort of big and splashy. But the way that I think a memorable encounter stays that way is because it's either something that seems really difficult and the players manage to pull it out and get victory even in what seemed like defeat, or the inverse, where it seemed like something that was going to be very straightforward, but the player somehow really got in over their heads, much, much worse than they expected. Both of those end up being particularly memorable. When I hear people talk about the game sessions they've enjoyed, when I talk about the ones I've liked, it's where things have gone off the rails, either because they got really hard or because we just knew it was going to be really hard and just kind of pulled it out by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking at this from two different perspectives. One is the memorable part, which is I agree with what you're saying. When something's really, really hard and maybe we just barely pull it out, that's like really, really going to be memorable for me. In terms of ones that I find to be really fun, it's not always the ones that were the most memorable. So it's kind of both. You know, just because something's not memorable doesn't mean it's not fun, or something is memorable means it was fun. And I was thinking about what makes it memorable for me is oftentimes, if I can come up with a cool solution, or my team comes up with some cool teamwork for solving a difficult encounter, you know, so maybe we come up with a great tactical approach for pulling things out and building a kill zone so that we can take on multiple big monsters in small chunks. Maybe I have a really cool special ability that I am able to I can line it up perfectly so it affects everybody and has major damage, or something like that. So those are things that make it fun for me when I can do something that normally in the course of every basic encounter, I don't get an opportunity to kind of show that off.
Yeah, I think that's an important axis, right? The fun part. And that's not to have the encounter be fun. It's actually not something that you would be able to rely on all the time. That is to say, if your idea of, this fun thing my operative is going to do is I'm going to try to trick my opponent and get an extra 3d8 of damage. That's a thing you do all the time. That's a class feature. The thing that's actually fun about it is some sort of interaction with the environment that you don't get all the time, right? Oh, as it turns out, there's this really narrow hallway that leads into this room, and we're going to trick the enemies into coming down it and set up a kill zone or a field of fire. Or, there's all these we're in a robot factory. Well, my android is going to pretend to be one of the derelict robots just, you know, hanging from the rack here in order to surprise somebody, right? Those are the kind of things that the environment allows you to play with it in a way that produces that kind of fun, I think.
Now, as an author or developer, is that something you try to intentionally give opportunities for, or you just presume that the GM and or players will look at the environment and interpret it in a way that they can do those sorts of things?
I try to put a bunch of hooks and then see what the players and the GM kind of run with, right? If I'm describing something like a robot factory, right, with hanging racks with derelict robots on them, and then conveyor belts that are sort of sluggishly moving across the room, and lighting that's sort of sparking sporadically, I don't have to say a lot as a writer or a developer. I don't have to say a lot about any of those things, but any one of those three could be something the players totally pick up on. It's like, wait a minute. Yeah, I want to move up to that guy and then attack him and have the conveyor belt move me just out of range so that I can shoot at him and not get a attack of opportunity or something like that. You know, that could be the cool thing that they try to build that on. And when I say that they, I mean the GM or the players. So very few environmental clues can be a great effect. And you have to realize not everybody is going to use every one of them, and some tables might not use any of them. But trying to drop in, hey, here's what this was like, is something that really helps.
And so that's something you do intentionally, though, is to leave some of those hooks. And do you often base them from, say, like a cinematic type of thing that somebody might have done? And so, hey, I saw this done in a movie, or maybe this is done in a video game. Maybe I'll leave this hook there and somebody will see that and it'll spark something. Hey, we can give that a try.
Yeah, if I've got something cinematic in mind, I'll usually try to flesh that out a little bit more. But otherwise, I just kind of want to drop it in there and see what GMs and players can do with it. I mean, my day job, right? I'm developing adventures every day as my day job. And I've got one just earlier this morning. You know, it was a small room in between a couple of other rooms. And the description that the author had provided is, this used to be a guard room long ago, but it's empty now. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't give people a lot to play with, right? So it's got, now, sure, it's got a guard room, but there's some hash marks on the walls and a busted iron stool there and what looks like a well-used whetstone. Well, I think all three of those things tell a little better story about what's going on in the room, but they're also just the kind of thing that on the combat on either side, somebody can be like, wait, we have that old iron stool. That seems heavy. Let me try to brace this thing up with it. Or, oh, hey, I want to chuck that whetstone to the other side and see if I can lure the monsters away. You know, I have any idea how people are going to interact with those things. They just wanted to add a couple of things that seemed a little sensible that the GM and players can then run with.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things as a GM I tried to do, especially when, say, there's something in there that players are supposed to perceive. You know, maybe they'll find a clue or a secret panel or a trap or something. And they'll roll a pretty good perception check, but it's below the threshold of whatever the DC is. And so they know they've rolled, you know, we rolled a 22. And so I say, okay, so I try to come up with something that would be probably in a space like that. That's not really relevant to what they're doing, but it adds a little flavor and interest. And then sometimes the players just kind of like grab it and just kind of go with it, you know, and it becomes a running joke. I did that in actually the Dead Sons AP when I was running it for my group. They were going through a kitchen area and there was lots of old rotten food and all kinds of stuff. And there was a perception check they had to make and they failed it. But I told them they found this small cellophane wrapped cake of some sort. And so they just kept playing on this Twinkie thing for the whole rest of the adventure. Ah! You know, says, oh, yeah, we're going to throw the Twinkie out there and do this. And so it's like, you know, just this small thing, but it kind of become very memorable for both me and them because of all the jokes and riffs they did out, you know.
Yeah, you don't actually have to add a lot. A little bit goes a long way with those things, right? Some sort of, you know, wrapped cake in a junky room is exactly the sort of things people will play with. But they will also play with what the adventure already gives them. I had a group I was running where they had a laser turret trap that gave them some trouble, but they managed to disable it. And then the Vesk wanted to just wrestle the whole laser turret off of there and carry it around. I'm like, well, you can't get it to fire. And the Vesk player is like, yeah, but they don't know that, right?
Right, right, right. Yeah, so it's interesting to see what becomes memorable for players. Now, in terms of other things that make these sorts of encounters fun, I think it gets back to what we talked about in the beginning, is kind of the notion of challenge, and where it's something I know that's hard, but something that we can tackle. And this is my personal take as a player. I like things that are relatively straightforward for tackling, rather than there's a whole bunch of radiation and poison and, you know, paralytic gas in there. And, you know, when it adds all these other layers of complexity, that makes it harder for me as a player to go and try to do the fun thing I want to do versus, oh, here's 10 big monsters you can go beat up on, even though they're really high CR and they'll hit back hard. So it's kind of, that's a personal preference, you know?
Do you think that's the case when you have, let me start by saying I agree. And the classic memorable encounter I have from this way back in the, the Living Greyhawk days was some stupidly difficult encounter that we had to go through where we were on some other plane with whipping, biting winds. There were terrible weather effects, and we were trying to navigate up this hill with dangerous walls of thorns on either side that you couldn't even move past without taking damage. And then we get jumped by a bunch of wraiths that can freely move despite the wind, despite the thorns. They keep popping out and attacking us and popping back in again. I'm like, come on. How many different negative environmental effects can you pile on us that don't affect the enemies, that still have, you know, they're just making this thing just needlessly, ludicrously difficult. And I think that is a big frustration. And that's a real danger to keep in mind when you're doing design or when you're GMing. But what about the other way? What if there are a lot of things where you're like, oh, this environment is filled with things I can use against the enemy that are bad for the enemy, not me? Are those more fun, do you think?
Well, I'm trying to think of specifics where that happens, you know. So maybe there's something with the terrain and I'm able to move more quickly through it. Maybe I'm stealthy and I can use that. I guess if I can use a special class skill or I can use a special ability because of the environmental effects that I normally couldn't use, I would like that. But I think if everything is, you know, weighed so heavily in my hand and the enemy is completely, you know, simple to take care of because of that, that doesn't make it as fun either. It's like, you know, there's a, one of the scenarios has a starship combat with a Vesk captain, and it's all about an honorable fight. And a lot of times when you do a starship combat, there's a lot of tactical movement and flanking and stuff like that to get to damage shields. And with this one, the honorable is like going head to head, just blasting at each other. And there's just a lot of times I just want to go head to head and blast at somebody, you know?
Yeah, there's something to be said for the fact that, you know, Starfinder is at its very core a combat simulator. So let's simulate a combat. Mm-hmm. That's what it does.
You know, so, you know, I think there's a lot of use in some of these tactical things and then some of the environmental effects and how that interacts. I just don't like it when there's too many layers on it. And I was running a scenario today that had radiation in it, which I think it's actually okay to have radiation and have to deal with it, but apparently it's a really big deal. And whoever wrote the scenario put in all these things to help boost your saves versus radiation that you could find throughout, so that when it actually came to the radiation, nobody ever had any fear of failing a savings throw. So it was a little disappointing on my part as a GM.
Just felt like it hardly mattered.
Yeah, it's like, oh, so there's all this medium radiation, but I have a plus 19 because of all this stuff. That's easy, you know? So yeah, it wasn't that extreme.
Some of that is the problem of assuming that if you've got three different things that the players can take advantage of, you really have to plan for the fact that players will take advantage of one of them, right? You might get very completionist kinds of tables where they want to do them all. But you have to realize that there are a lot of people that are going to they're just going to fail a check to find something, or they're just going to not find something interesting to pursue. And so it's hard to do. It's hard to have a situation where you're like, well, if you get one out of the three, then you're just okay. But if you got 3 out of 3, then it's sort of overwhelmingly easy for you, right? It's just negligible. And that's some really hard design. That's really hard to do. I find myself as an author and as a developer trying to thread that a lot, where it's, all right, well, here's this area that if the players do absolutely everything, they succeed at all their perception checks to find everything, and they're looking in every single nook and cranny, well, they're not going to have a real challenging time with the villain. But most tables won't. And what are most tables going to do? Well, if I don't put enough in there, then then there's no reason to look, because it's just sort of boring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's tough. It's tough balance.
Yeah, and I can see that. And I think radiation and poison, it's almost like there's always some sort of warning ahead of time, some sort of self-mitigation available. And then a lot of times there's some post-mitigation that is available as well. So I think that's good, in part because these things are ones that can be really, if left unchecked, can be really debilitating throughout an adventure, especially going right to hit points, and hit points being a lot harder to recover during an adventure than stamina points. So,
right. Although not materially harder. I mean, I think the thing that's funny about that I run into a lot in Starfinder is here's some abilities that will heal hit points, but not stamina. And a lot of the time during play, I'm like, well, that doesn't matter for me, right? I'm mm-hmm. still using, I feel like I'm using my stamina very effectively. So something like a healing potion that is going to give me hit points back is not sometimes as useful to me or as interesting.
Mm-hmm. This actually brings up another point. Do you think having two different pools, one for stamina and one for hit points, makes your typical encounter more or less fun, more or less challenging?
I think less the way that Starfinder does it, because I think having, here's one big pool of points, and it is your durability is sort of roughly split halfway between, and you go halfway down your durability, then you start sinking into the lower half that's a little more serious. I don't like that mechanic as much. I don't know whether I like it any more or less than standard hit points, but if I can veer into another game that I love quite a bit, called Torg, they do have two different tracks. They've got a shock track and a wound track. And you'll take shock damage, just kind of like hit points. And when you get down to zero, you're unconscious. The second track, wounds, you only get 4 of them. If you take 4 wounds, you die. And each wound you have is a measurable impact on your ability to adventure. It's a penalty to everything you do. And so when damage comes in, depending on how heavy the hit is, you'll take some amount of shock almost always, and then occasionally a wound or 2 or 3 or 4 that is actually something that you really care about. I think two tracks works very well. I think it can be done better than the way that Starfinder does it.
Yeah, I like that, because it really discriminates about the nature of the injury that you're taking, rather than, you know, all injury being the same within this overall pool. One of the things I noticed with Starfinder is I don't see a lot of folks getting into hit points unless there's something specifically that's attacking hit points, or it is a extremely, extremely difficult encounter, which is usually like your final boss. I know of only probably 1 or 2 final bosses that I've seen tables really get in so much trouble that they had to run away or they're all going to die. For the most part, it seems like everybody goes in there and can fight the boss. They might lose all their stamina and get a little bit into hit points, but not many people are like hanging on that edge. It's not, it doesn't seem as scary as, you know, like Pathfinder for some reason. That's just a feeling I get with Starfinder and a lot of the encounters I run into.
Yeah, there's a good question there. When's the last time you're playing with a group in Starfinder that ran away from an encounter? You're like, nope, we cannot take this. We are getting out. We are bugging out.
Yeah, I can tell you, I've had one team that did that, and it was at PaizaCon last year, doing a pretty high level 7 to 10 encounter. And in that particular encounter, I know about half the teams that went against this particular boss end up having to run away.
So you were in good company at least.
Yes. But that was unusual because it was kind of not the norm. You know, the players didn't expect it. And I actually had to send a lot of signaling saying that, no, if you stay here, you're all going to die. They didn't get that. You know what
because
I'm saying?
It this hardly thing ever is, happens. It's taken yeah. a,
right. I mean, one guy's standing there and he's taken two attacks, each that's taking half his stamina. And like, this is just going to keep coming. And it's not clicking to them that, oh, wait a second. There's nothing that we're doing that is mitigating this, you know. It's very strange because they're not in that mentality, a lot of the players, because Starfinder has not been that as lethal, I think, as maybe it could be.
Yeah, I think that's probably so. I think that that's one of the things to enhance maybe the memorability or in some cases even the fun is to ensure that there is some believable danger there. I think maybe that's one of the things that is missing with a lot of Starfinder. I can see why that tends to be dialed back a little bit in organized play because nobody wants to be, mm-hmm. no, I've written it, I guess. Nobody wants to be the writer who's written that adventure where a bunch of, you know, five new players excited to get into this organized play, sit down for the first time and they're all just overwhelmingly defeated in the second encounter, right? Then they're going to stand up from the table and go, why would we even bother doing this dumb campaign anyway? And they're never going to come back. So there's some discussion about, let's make sure this is scaled appropriately, maybe even tuned a little bit on the easier side. But I think the gloves really could come off more on like the table you were talking about, the 10 to 11 tables, right? The high level tables where people really want to, we don't have to worry about losing those people. Let's give them a real thrill, frankly, of danger.
Yeah, and you know, because as Starfinder Society player, you get fame, and if you die, you just spend a little bit of this fame, and they go recover your body and get resurrected. It's not like there's a major cost to you. You know, I have high level characters that have all this fame. I have no idea what to do with it. So it would be fine if I died a couple times.
Please.
It would actually make it pretty exciting. You know, the challenge. And so I think part of the issue, and this is what I see as GMing, because I'll be GMing something where I think, oh, man, this is like the highest level encounter we have. This is going to be so hard for players. And I have a couple in society play that I've done that. And it's like the players are so optimized or so tuned, and what they can do is – with a particular skill set or ability that they're able to cut through what maybe would normally be really hard for an average type of player. I don't know if that makes sense. So somebody who's more haphazard in their build is going to have more of a challenge, but somebody who's, you know, really built out to the max on something on particular areas, they just come in and they just decimate the enemy. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
So I know a couple players that's how they focus all of their builds, and it's not really fun actually to play with them because you're in there and it's like, oh yeah, here's so and so, he's just going to kill everything and then we'll just move on to the next thing.
Yeah, that can be a little bit demoralizing as well. So I think that if we're keeping the focus on memorability and fun, we want to make sure that we want to arrange it so as little of that happens as possible, but it's a hard needle to thread.
Is that something you're very conscious of as a developer and author? You know, that kind of people that are going to really min-max versus, you know, an organic build?
I don't. I have to say I tend to be a little bit, dial things a little bit on the harder side just because I frequently make the mistake of assuming that players who coming into the game have a system mastery level that is on par with me. And that's not the case. That's a dangerous assumption for me to make. And it's given me something of a reputation of being a particularly killer author in some cases. I think that I'm walking that back a little bit by at the lower level, sort of intentionally trying to keep things a little more welcoming, I guess. Maybe dial it a little more towards the middle or even back towards the easy on the lower levels. But I think I've got, like many people, I have such low experience with very high level play that I don't feel like I'm ramping everything up to super hard on high level play just because I don't know it very well. And by the time players play their characters up to the levels of like a 18th level adventure that I've written sort of out of the blue, well, they're going to know their characters way better than I ever could as an adventure author. So if anything, I think that I'll inadvertently make things a little bit on the easy side then. But
yeah, that actually seems like a huge challenge, especially for something like Starfinder, where, you know, now you're having to write these super high level things and there's nobody that's played at that level except for like a homebrew, campaign.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that that is, to be honest, one of the things that I focus on when I'm writing very high level stuff is that I keep in mind that it's going to be what I call a bookshelf game, which is any adventure or any role-playing product or, you know, that you're going to get that is going to be cool to read, but, you know, realistically, you just may never play it, right? So it's something's going to sit on your bookshelf. And so I particularly want to make sure that when I'm doing stuff that's very high level, that I'm just not just trying to create the combat challenges, but I work harder than on other stuff even to make sure I'm pouring in interesting environmental factors or interesting NPCs that kind of get across their personality when you're reading it on the page. Because that's the way that I think a lot of people are going to consume that more than actual kicking into play. The advantage is when people do kick into play, that also translates through to them in a very fun way.
Yeah. Now here's an interesting question for you. And this is actually kind of based on my own personal experience as well. So like, we're starting book four of Dawn of Flame, The Blind City, which is written by Ron Lundeen. I have a copy of that. I have refused to open it up even because I, as a player, I know there's lots of cool stuff in there, but I want to be surprised when I encounter it in the game. So,
well, and you'll... I'm interested to see how surprised you are, because you may remember, and this has been, you know, well over a year now, we playtested the first part of this adventure, less than the first third, maybe even the first quarter is all. And so you may be like, oh, I kind of remember that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple things about that. But I mean, overall, like when you talk about building it as a bookshelf game where there's lots of really cool stuff and there's, you know, especially the back matter and things like that, the issue I run into as a player is I'm not going to look at that back matter and stuff until I've actually played it. You know, does that make sense? I don't want to spoil the surprise for myself.
Right, right. No, that absolutely makes sense. And I think that there's no denying the fact that the first two thirds of one of the Starfinder or Pathfinder Adventure Path adventures, first two thirds is seen so much more than the last third, mm-hmm. right? Because only the GM is going to be usually picking up the article about here's a, you know, how you can build military style vehicles in a military style campaign. Maybe the rare player will find that particular topic interesting. But the actual adventure of, you know, driving your Jeep, you know, your space Jeep hog wild over the swamps while you're blasting, gross swamp monsters is something the players and GM hopefully will enjoy. Mm-hmm.
So kind of switching gears a little bit here, but kind of along the lines of fun here, we do have a question from Target Practice, one of our listeners. And Target Practice asks about, how can we bring Starship Combat to life so it doesn't get tedious after the first few rounds? And I'm going to defer to you to start with what your take is on Starship Combat. I'm curious to hear that. And then what you would do to change it.
Oh, I think, I don't know. I don't have an awful lot of love for the Starship Combat system. It's something that I was involved with actually implementing from the very beginning. I had the five-part introductory quest adventure had Starship Combats in it, and I knew that I was writing Starship Combat for people who probably had never even seen this type of rule system before. So they are just absolutely standard, basic types of things. But as people get more experience with them, they tend to see that, rightly so, I think, as, hey, this is kind of boring. It's kind of a boring way to do it. And so it's a really valid question on how do you spice it up? How do you keep it exciting? I think the real danger in the Starship Combat, the real problem with it that I see, is that in a fight, one of the heroes can go unconscious. Frankly, one of the heroes can even get killed, and it doesn't mean the fight is a loss. Their friends can carry on through and win the day. But the way Starship Combat works is if the hero's ship gets destroyed, that's the end. It is lost. You know, that one death in quotes, is a TPK, game over. And so it requires then that the Starship Combat be very survivable, which means it tends to have, I feel like, lower risk and kind of tends to drag on and on. All those are a way of saying I totally understand this person's question. And I don't know that I've got a great way to solve it that isn't the general way to solve any sort of fight that seems like it's going on and on, which is to either sort of lead into some tactically questionable maneuvers in order to speed things along, or just straight up cheat, right? Oh, well, you know, no, they failed to get their shield back up, so this is an opportunity for you to fire, even though on my side, on the GM side of the screen, I'm looking down at a 19 on the die. I know full well that they were able to have gotten more tons of shield up, but that's just not what's going to be fun at the time. I don't have any better solutions than that. What about you? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Into the Unknown, because I ran that a ton of times at demo tables, and the Starship Combat on that took forever for players. And it's one of the issues with Starship Combat, especially at low levels, especially before they changed the DCs, which was one of the big issues, is that it's really hard for players to be successful at lower tiers. It was originally, you know, players just don't have enough skill points in order to be really good at the things that would help speed up Starship Combat. Now I don't know that I can make it a lot more fun, but what we do makes it go by a little bit more quickly. And one of the things is to make sure everybody has a role. And then I have role cards that explain what everybody can do. And it tells you kind of the basic DCs. You can kind of fill in the blanks. And then I just make sure we go through the sequence pretty quickly. Okay, you know, first we'll have engineering officer, then piloting, science officer can take action, captain can take an action. Okay, we go into gunnery. And just boom, boom, boom. Try to keep things moving is what I try to do with it. It's really hard at low levels. At the higher levels, especially if you have a good pilot and a good gunner, it goes by pretty quickly. On the player side, one of the things I always try to encourage the players to do is to have multiple gunners. That's one of the things that will help speed things up, or to have a good gunner that can take advantage of firing multiple weapons, like a broadside or things like that. So once they get to sixth level or higher, Starship Combat gets a little bit better. The problem is, at the earlier levels, when people are first encountering it, oftentimes they're inexperienced with it, the GM is inexperienced with it, and the combat itself has really hard to make DCs, so it's just no fun for them.
Kind of a grind.
Yeah, it's a grind. You're just, okay, we got to do this because it's the only way that we can get to the planet where we can actually do the real mission. We got to do these things. Now, you know, I have a couple experience groups I work with, and it's like, man, one of them loves Starship Combat because they just blow through it so quick. And they always have a character who's going to be really good at captain, really good at gunnery, really good at piloting. So they know they're always going to be able to take care of anybody in Starship Combat. Not an issue. If you have a team that's designed more around things that aren't going to help that. So if you have a bunch of Solarians and Mystics, which up until recently might not have had big roles, you'd have people that wouldn't know what to do. But now with the additional roles that we have, the Mystic, what is it called? The Mystic Officer?
The chief and mate
is it mystical? I don't know what it's called.
Magic officer? Is that?
Yeah, the two
The one that you're right. The one that the spellcasters get to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So those two roles have enabled basically now everybody can have a role and feel like they can do something and contribute if they're using all the different actions that are available. And that's part of it. You know, having a card where you can see, oh, as the magic officer, these are the things that I can do. And they actually can significantly impact our ability to hit, our ability to do this, whatever. And so it makes it feel more like people are more involved. And so I think if you can keep it to three rounds, it won't be very tedious. If it goes to 15 rounds, then it gets really tedious. And it's because your team is having difficulty making the DCs or actually maybe even doing damage because you have one gunner who doesn't shoot very well. That's usually the...
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that you've... That's great advice to have multiple gunners. I think that you're onto something when you say that Starship Combat just kind of gets more interesting at sixth level when people unlock the ability to spend resolve in order to do more stuff. I think that's one of the things that I really embrace, and I think that more players ought to, is understanding that resolve is itself a limited pool intentionally. But when you're out in space, you're very likely to be far enough away from your destination that you'll be able to recover your resolve before you need it again. So, heck yeah, blow all your resolve into space combat. Why? What's holding you back?
Yeah, and so for a lot of folks who are just starting out and having difficulty with space combat early on, I would ask that they at least try it at a higher level with a GM and other players that knew what they're doing and use that as, okay, this is how it can go. And see if you like it then. If you don't like it then you're not going to like it. And, you know, there are a lot of folks that hand wave it and try to make it go quickly. And I notice a lot fewer scenarios have Starship tags too, as compared to in the past.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the things I'm excited about is the Starship Operation Manual.
Ooh, yes,
coming
yes.
out. You know more about that than I do, right? It's one of the, you've written for it and I haven't, but... From what I know about it, and I haven't had the chance to look through it yet, is it just all about trying to focus on that part of the game and make that a more sort of thrilling, engaging piece of the game. And I'm all in favor of that. It really says a lot to me that the people behind Starfinder have been able to say, look, this is a part of our game that is maybe not quite so beloved. And instead of their answer is, well, how do we fix it? How do we make it better? Right? How do we make it something that people who love it love more and people who maybe don't love it can finally learn to love it, right? That's a hard tack to take whenever you're a game designer. The tendency is, oh, people don't love this part of the game. Well, then we'll just kind of tone it down. And they did the opposite. I think that's really brave.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how things are received because when that was announced, a lot of people are hoping that there'd be major changes to the actual rule set. And I don't think they're going to see as much of that as in terms of options on things you can do in terms of with different roles, with different types of weapons, with different types of starships. And it's more like the starships themselves are more similar to the customization you can do on a character and have so many different flavors and so many different things you can do. You're going to see that more on a starship now compared to just these pretty basic frames that we're seeing.
Oh, that'll be really cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. So I think we're about the end of our time for this week's episode. And so it was good that we got to at least one listener question. It tied really well to our overall topic. One of the things I'll say is anybody else that has any topics or questions that they have, if you could post it over on the No Direction and one of our Discord channels, we have one that talks about feedback for podcasts. Another one, just kind of discussions and blogs and things like that. Post it somewhere there, a question like that, and one of us will bring it up hopefully in a future episode. So and with that,
absolutely. And the danger if you don't is that we'll just ramble incessantly. So focus our rambling however you'd like, and we're happy to grab onto that.
Yes, so we can have more focused rambling. All right, and so for this week, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.